Hello, and welcome to another episode of the SIRS Group podcast. I am Barbara.
And I'm JC.
And today we are going to cover a much requested topic, which is what to do if you can't afford SIRS treatment yet. And there are things you can do, believe it or not. And I know that this illness and the treatment thereof is pricey. Very unfortunately, and a lot of it is not covered by insurance, which really sucks. So I understand that a lot of people who are very sick, who consequently probably can't work or don't work to their fullest capacity, are struggling to pay for it. So there's a lot of things that are a bad cycle are going in on themselves. What phrase was I trying to say? Anyway, it's a bad cycle. We get it. So this episode is for you if you are trying to figure out what you can do right now while you are saving money in order to save up to start your treatment.
And just a reminder, we are not medical professionals. We are SIRS patients. We've read the textbook. We run a group of people who are healing from SIRS, but none of this should be taken as medical advice.
Yes. And the first thing to do is a lot of people are not they think they have SIRS, and I think there's a lot of hesitation to name their issue as SIRS. I don't know what that is. Do you know what that is? Like, just this
Yeah,
feeling
it's
that
like,
they don't want it to be true. But to me, it's like that's a path to healing. So I would really hope that it's true personally. But yeah, what do you think?
I felt both. Like, when we were first learning about SIRS, the first time I was told about SIRS, I was like, no, I have an autoimmune disease. This isn't me. And I think a big part of that was feeling like, A, there was so much information. I felt like it was trying to gaslight me. Now I know it's just, they have done their research, so there's a lot of research you're going to run into if you are researching SIRS. But I think another part of me was just looking at the size of the protocol and feeling like that was overwhelming. But then the second time I was told, like, no, actually, you should go look. I think you have SIRS. When I looked at it then and I was able to kind of digest a little bit more of the research and have a better understanding, then it was like, oh my gosh, this hope for healing. But I think especially for people who have been sick for a really long time, you almost have this sense of learned hopelessness. Every time you are told about a thing that has helped someone else and you try that same thing and it doesn't work for you, you become a little less hopeful for the next thing. So I think it's some of that playing in as well.
Yeah, and that's totally fair. And that makes sense to me. The good news, I guess, on the diagnosis front is that really you can get pretty darn sure. And I'm talking about like in the 90-ish percent sure of whether or not you have SIRS by spending $15, basically. So the three things that you can do to kind of self-diagnose, and yes, you would want to get diagnosed eventually by a doctor. But in the meantime, if you want to be like 90 something percent sure that you have SIRS, what you would want to do is take the vision test or visual contrast sensitivity test. You would want to check the symptom clusters. And there are 13 symptom clusters. If you have eight or more, the likelihood of having SIRS is again, that's like an 80-ish percent chance. And then, if you have a history of exposure, and the history of exposure means, oh, yeah, I got bit by a few ticks this one summer back in 89. I don't know why I picked that year. Or, oh, I definitely lived in a moldy home my entire childhood. If you have any, jog your memory of any of the places you've lived or worked where you didn't feel great while you were there, or you noticed mold, or you knew that mold was growing in the basement of your home, and that's where you were for many years. That's a history of exposure. So if you can do those three things, that is going to probably solidify your diagnosis so you know pretty much what you're dealing with.
And once you are able to kind of confirm for yourself that you have SIRS, really the next step would be working with a SIRS practitioner to start the protocol. And if that needs to be delayed for you because of finances, and I totally understand that, I had to pace my treatment to my finances. There are some things you can do before you start working with a provider in order to kind of fast track your protocol once you get there.
Yes, and the first thing, the thing that JC and I were ahead of the game on, we were already doing, was eating carnivore.
Did it before it was
Like, totally.
cool.
So yes, and you don't have to be fully carnivore. I think a lot of the rules in paleo are great. Keto, even better. Carnivore, probably best. Maybe I'm biased, but it's just to eliminate the inflammatory possibilities in your life, basically, is what you're looking to do. It also raises your cholesterol. And for those of you who've watched us before, you know that the first medication you take in the process of healing from SIRS is a binder that specifically was a cholesterol lowering medication, not a statin, but it does grab fat. And so you want your cholesterol to actually be on the higher side because you will tolerate those binders a little bit better. So if you can get a jump on that and start eating a higher fat diet, all the better.
And another way to buffer the cell walls with fat, which is really what the binder is stripping, is your cell walls of fat. And to buffer those, you can also start lipid replacement. So that can be high dose omega-3s, the SPMs, which are the specialized high dose omega-3s, and also start looking at taking electrolytes. A lot of people with SIRS have electrolyte imbalance, and so that might make you feel a little bit better right away.
Yeah, I definitely notice a difference. Even now, I'm in the midst of treatment and I can go to the gym and get very lightheaded very quickly if I haven't taken electrolytes that day. But taking them throughout the day really helps my body figure itself out and not allow me to get a little bit dizzy or lightheaded, and also fewer muscle cramps too. So there's a lot that something like an electrolyte supplement will help you with when you have SIRS. And one note on the omega-3 fish oils, and I do take the Omeprim, the like extra special one. And the reason I do that is I did try just regular omega-3 fish oils versus Omeprim, and I noticed that my skin would get super dry with nothing. It would still look dry and feel dry with the regular fish oils, but with Omeprim every day, I actually have like more normal, softer, like hydrated skin. So to visually be able to see that on my hands was pretty impressive. I did that total self experiment. You may be different. Try it yourself. I literally ran out of Omeprim and thought, oh, I'll just do the cheaper stuff because I don't want to spend more money. And I saw the difference, unfortunately, on my skin. So that's how I knew those were making a difference. So.
The number one thing you can do to fast track your treatment and the hardest step of the protocol for most people is removing yourself from exposure. We
Yes.
talked about potential for like Lyme through the tick bites and mold through the water damaged buildings, but not only is this a hard thing to do, it's a hard thing for a lot of people to identify. Like, what is their biotoxin. So we're going to talk through some of them.
Yeah. So the most prevalent, the most common, biotoxin that most people with SIRS are dealing with is in the mold family, and that will include the actinos, which is bacteria that hangs out with mold, and the endotoxins, which is basically sewage, poop, all that fun stuff. The best thing that you can do that is within your abilities, hopefully physically, or hopefully you have somebody in your family that can help you, is to clean. Clean, 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 clean. If you can, the idea is to remove the toxins from your environment, not necessarily to kill them. So you don't need to go spraying bleach everywhere necessarily.
Actually, don't use bleach very specifically.
Right. You can use actually something as mild as water mixed with dish soap. The dish soap itself, as you are dry wiping and then wet wiping and vacuuming, switch that order, vacuum, dry wipe, then wet wipe, your surfaces in your home, that is physically removing it. from your environment. That's the goal. That is what the dish soap can help do. If you want to add some good scent or extra power, you can add lemon juice or vinegar to that. JC, I think your mixture might have been slightly different, or you added something else, right?
Yeah, I like to use vinegar, and I normally put some. It's so I just have like a glass spray bottle, and it's 50% water, and then like a 2/3 water and 1/3 vinegar. And then I'll just put like 10 drops of tea tree oil in it. And I like that mix. I did have like over 100,000 on one of my Actinos scores, and now it's under 10,000. So I know it works. And to your point, it's working because I'm cleaning and I'm actually removing the actinos.
Right, exactly. Perfect. So that's the goal there, is to remove anything that has settled on any surface. We're talking walls, floors, countertops, bookcases, books, figures, salt lamp, anything that is in your environment, you will need to wipe down and remove that. The like hidden issues that maybe some people don't even know about or know to check for would be your behind and under your fridge is a place to check. There's a tray under a lot of fridges that can collect moisture and dirt and debris, which is, of course, exactly how you grow a little bit of mold. And then also, some fridges apparently have like cardboard attached to the back of them, and cardboard is like a perfect mold food. So that seems stupid, but you want to check. Basically underneath and behind your fridge if you are able to, because that is a could be a bad situation. And then the other place, which is something that I just discovered in my own home, is the washing machine. There can be, especially if you smell like a mildewy, not quite right smell from coming from your washing machine, you can actually take them apart, ideally outside. And ideally by someone else, because if you have SIRS, you don't really want to be breathing all of that in. But if you take it apart, you can visually inspect everything inside and clean it. Sounds like a pain in the ass, and it kind of is. And so, especially if you're dealing with SIRS and you're sick and you don't want to do all that physical labor, but it can be a missing piece that I certainly recommend people at least check for, because that was definitely a problem for me. And
If, sorry, go ahead.
finally, one more place, for specifically for endotoxins. If you're thinking, I don't have a dog that's tracking in little bits of dog poop on their feet or something like that. If you don't have any, no, you don't have compost outside your door, there's no like obvious poop or decomposition going on around your house that would explain endotoxins. The other place that it could come from is an unused drain. So you do want to make sure that the little pee trap in your at the end of every sink or any drain that's in your home is has water in it so that it doesn't dry out, which allows the gases to come into your home. Just run water in those drains at least once a week for a few minutes. Feels a little wasteful, but better that than not. We did also have somebody in the group suggest actually pouring some vegetable oil in drains. I am less apt to do that, just because like I'm nervous about oil and drains as a homeowner, but at the same time, I don't a vegetable oil is not going to really freeze, not here in Vegas anyway, so I think that's probably safe. So just decide what feels good to you and do that thing.
If your home feels uncleanable, like there's visible mold growing in your basement, you've had extensive water damage, maybe, a sewage pipe burst, or you've been through a hurricane, you might want to consider moving. And one thing that might be more accessible to you now before you actually start working with a provider is doing the environment testing. You can get tests for mycotoxins, actinos, and endotoxins through Envirobiomics. We're not sponsored by them. We pay them a lot of money personally to test our own homes. But you can actually test to see if your environment might need to be remediated or might need to be cleaned. And that's a little more accessible. I think for the three, it's around the $300 mark. So there are other types of exposure, water damage. Chemical soup being the mold, actinos, and endos is the most common. But there are other exposure sources. So you had said earlier if you've had tick bites, and that's because until recently, the second most common exposure type was Lyme disease. And Lyme disease is notoriously difficult to diagnose, and whichever type you're diagnosed with can determine which treatment you go for. So if Lyme treatment is more accessible to you in some way, like maybe you can get it covered by insurance or go through a different provider and not have to wait to see a service provider to get it started, that's certainly something you can consider. We know that Dr. Peg DiTullio is like the Lyme champion of the SIRS community. And so if I knew I had Lyme, I would definitely try to see her. And the other thing we should mention is like if you can't afford SIRS treatment right now, I would still try to get on the wait list for some of these providers because they're booking months out. So hopefully by the time you actually get in with them, you would have saved enough for that initial appointment fee and possibly whatever blood work or medications would come along with that.
Great call. And the another exposure, which you alluded to moments ago, as far as Lyme being until recently the second most popular biotoxin, the one that may have eclipsed it, I believe, at this point, is COVID. Is that what you were hinting at?
Yeah, COVID and anything that would create spike protein. So that could either be actually getting COVID or getting the COVID vaccine or possibly being exposed to people who have had the COVID vaccine.
Yeah, that's fun. And that is specifically something that you had to deal with, which we talked about in a recent episode on COVID, which you can definitely check out. We'll put a link in the show notes.
We did, but spoiler alert. I personally followed the FLCCC spike protein protocol in order to eliminate my COVID issues so that I could. I did it in tandem with my SIRS treatment, but I know a lot of people, especially people who I have identified as being like long haulers or having post-COVID syndrome, they have found relief doing this protocol even before SIRS treatment. So it's certainly something you could look into. It's a pretty accessible protocol. If you have a provider who will work with you, it makes it so much easier. But if not, I did it myself. So it is totally accessible in that way. Shoemaker released the Shoemaker Group, so survivingmold.com released a paper saying that spike protein acted a lot like other biotoxins and responded to SIRS treatment in the same way others biotoxin exposures would. We don't actually have stats yet, but based on the number of like increased SIRS cases we're seeing, that's why we're kind of hinting at it being more popular than Lyme.
So fancy. Well, also, if you are wondering, well, gosh, I had COVID. How do I know if I need to do the spike protein protocol? On one hand, it probably doesn't hurt to do it just for fun. Probably doesn't. I don't think there's a lot of side effects attached to the FLCCC protocol, spike protein protocol. But also, a really big sign for me is when somebody says, "Oh, I had COVID and such date, and I've never been the same since." That's a pretty big indication. It's like, yeah, it's like someone saying, "Oh, I don't know. I probably don't have SIRS. My house that I grew up in, the basement was all moldy, but that does. I mean, I didn't live down there." Like, I would also be like, "You have SIRS." So in this situation, yeah, if you have had COVID or the vaccine, or again, even being around others that have had the vaccine, even if you haven't had it, if you notice symptoms that have never have changed, something about you has changed in that moment and has never recovered, I think it's definitely, I mean, gosh, it's not an expensive protocol to my knowledge, right? It's relatively reasonable to do it. I would do it if I were you. Again, not medical advice, just an opinion.
I would do it if I were me.
Yeah, exactly. If I were me, I am there.
So beyond removing yourself from exposure, there are some things you can do now that might help you feel a little bit better in the meantime. We know a lot of people with SIRS have histamine issues or mast cell activation syndrome where they're just really reactive to the environment. So a couple of things you can do is try a low histamine diet and also try either mast cell stabilizers or histamine blockers, and either of those might help you. If you are super reactive, I would strongly recommend doing this with a provider. But if you're someone who has lower grade histamine issues, you can try over-the-counter histamine blockers, certainly.
Perfect. Yep. And kind of on that note, of removing things that could be causing you to feel worse or stopping potentially toxic procedures, things that you may want to look into having reversed or undone or removed would be IUDs, which is like any kind of birth control implant. I know they do the one in the arm too, and like there's a few different birth control contraptions. I feel like that's an appropriate word for it, that you may want to get removed in case just another foreign body in the body. You don't know if it's causing problems. Kind of good to just like clean slate that. Physical implants, and I would say breast implants, but like people can get chin implants and cheek implants, all kinds of implants. So
Butt
any
implants.
butt all of the implants. You may, again, if you got an implant done and you have not really been the same since, never fully recovered, or you don't feel very good and it's just gotten worse over the years, might be time to revisit that. I don't know. I would hope that that could be covered by insurance, but I don't know if it is. So again, this, I don't know if this even applies to, cheap things you can do, but definitely start the process of looking into that. And this is certainly money saving. You might want to stop getting Botox or decide not to start if you are considering it, like some people in their mid-30s. I'm pretty much late 30s by this point. I don't know where the line is, but anyway,
The line
this
is
one hurts
42.
me. Is it?
You can call yourself mid-30s till you're 42. I'll allow
Oh, good. I got a little time. Thank you for that. Thank you
Oh,
for that
yeah.
permission.
Sure thing.
It's going to pay off for you when you get here.
Yeah,
So,
no, this is all for me. Yeah, absolutely.
oh, man.
And then there are things you can do to add more good to your life. So, getting more sun is a good idea. We know that one of the things with SIRS is it lowers MSH, and sunlight can help raise MSH. So, definitely look into that. You might want to kind of scale your approach to sunlight if you are someone who has histamine reactions to sunlight. But once you build I think the quantum people call it a solar callus. Once you build a solar callus, you'll be able to tolerate more sunlight. Getting more sleep. Lowering stress, doing some gentle movement practices. That's been huge for me, actually, is moving away from like cardio, like HIIT cardio and weightlifting, and moving more towards like long walks, yoga. Like it just feels so much better for my body. And I know a lot of people relate to this because a lot of people in the group have said they relate to this. It's like so frustrating when you used to be an athlete or a very physically capable person, and that's kind of taken away from you. It's really hard to think like I could be satisfied with gentle movement. But really, just like allowing myself to dive into that and allowing myself to be open to that, it was a game changer for me. It feels a lot better for me right now.
Yeah, and a slow progression is appropriate too. So if you are like, oh man, I want to get back to that, you probably can. You probably can. You just have to do it slowly, systematically. You don't want to go crazy, go back to the gym and do everything like you used to, and then be in lots of pain the next day or the rest of the week, for example. So I think just pushing yourself just a little bit more each time, as opposed to all the way the first time, is another way to do that. But I know a lot of this, more sleep, lower stress is like easier said than done. But try to be creative in your ways of bringing more sleep and lower stress into your life. Maybe that's not looking at your phone after a certain amount of time. And that's good for sleep and lowering stress, probably, depending on what you're reading. So there's little things that you can try to do, setting alarms to actually get ready for bed, adjusting your morning schedule so you can sleep a little bit later, whatever that is. Just take good care of yourself and do things that you enjoy, do things that you love. This goes into kind of our limbic retraining, like when which we've done a couple episodes on that too, so you can always review those. But yeah, just take care of yourself, focus on yourself, and make sure you're feeling as good as possible.
You know what else you can do to start preparing for your SIRS treatment before you can afford it?
Pray tell.
You can join the SIRS group. We have resources and support over there. We have a lot of people now who are like, it's interesting because there's so many people at so many different stages of their SIRS treatment. So you have people who have completely healed and now are on the management side. Whenever they get re-exposed, they just do a short 2 weeks on the binders and the VIP spray, and they're good to go. And then you have people who are very, very close to those end steps. You have people on VIP. You have people who, are in that middle ground, taking the binders, figuring out what they need to do for their histamine issues. But then you also have people who are just starting or just considering starting. I saw in the group, I think it was yesterday, someone posted they don't even have a diagnosis yet, but they joined the group because they were like, I belong here. So it's really cool. We do have, all stages of the SIRS treatment spectrum represented over in the group.
Yeah, it's a really good place. So, we hopefully will see you there.
See you there.